read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. As a growing list of reports is documented in recent months, several North Carolina state government agencies are struggling mightily to recruit and retain employees. The Department of Health and Human Services reports a 25% vacancy rate, and in some prisons, the numbers are even higher than that. And not surprisingly, these kinds of worker shortages are having big and negative impacts on both the workers who remain and the quality of public services. The explanations for this worrisome situation are numerous, but as I learned in a recent conversation I had with the executive director of the State Employees Association of North Carolina, Artis Watkins, no factor looms larger than low salaries and tough working conditions that are directly attributable to the short-sighted budgeting policies that Republican legislative leaders have been pursuing for the last several years.
Well, Artis Watkins, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
A lot I want to ask you about. Busy year for Scenic. Talk to us about the General Assembly. They'll be back in for a short session in April. You did succeed in getting some raises for state employees last year, but boy, a lot of agencies still struggling with big vacancy rates and clearly state employees not being paid what they should in many, many instances. Talk to us about some of these challenges that we face this day in the world of public employment.
Yes, there were raises, but those were not enough. And, you know, one of the things we're holding on to and we'll be reminding the legislature is shortly after the budget came out, Speaker Moore told the press, and I think he reiterated it recently, that the 3% slated for this year for state employees, that they were hoping they could maybe add to that amount. And I think that's important. But there's another wrinkle to it that's so important. This vacancy crisis you mentioned, you know, we've seen things like recruitment bonuses thrown out there. You don't need to recruit if you can retain. So retention bonuses that are meaningful are very important across the board. We've seen them used sort of with surgical precision for very specific occupations, but we're going to have to do something more with those.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty shocking. I saw that DHHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, shared recently they have a 25% vacancy rate, which obviously has implications right for the workers who are left, right? I mean, that just means they've got to work harder and basically they're uncompensated because they're working even more and burning out, right?
Right. You know, they're working themselves to death. And the problem is in our facilities, our institutions, they're caring for some of the most vulnerable in our population. And that's not what you want. You don't want people who are overworked, overburdened, and who eventually start to grow resentful of that because they feel like nobody's hearing them. When I say nobody's hearing them, I do want to be clear. I think Secretary Kinsley and his leadership team have done a good job of letting them know that in the agency, they're being heard. But the agency can't by themselves wave a big enough wand to get those salaries where they need to be competitive.
I've looked at the numbers and it continues to just amaze me that over the last dozen or so years in North Carolina, we've effectively cut our investment in state and local government by about a third in terms of when you look at it as a share of our economy. And that's got to be a big part of what's going on here. We've slashed taxes repeatedly, and that has had an impact on how we fund basic public services and structures. And it just filters down to the individual employees. I'm sure you're seeing that you're painfully aware of that trend.
Well, the way we look at it is that there's an overall vacancy rate in state government that's still hovering around 25%. By the way, some of our prisons are staffed with vacancy rates in excess of 60% vacancy. But at the end of the day, if it's 25% overall, the way we've looked at that is, no matter what your tax rate is, taxpayers are paying for 100% of the services, but they're receiving 75%. So it's not a good deal for taxpayers. It's a much better deal to invest appropriately in the workforce, pay the going wage, get people into those jobs, and give taxpayers everything they're paying for.
And have employees who want to make it their career maybe and stay and not. Of course, this coincides with the fact that we have had record low unemployment, and there's a big disparity between what a lot of people, they may be dedicated public servants, but when they look at the private sector and they compare them, a lot of times they don't have any choice if they want to do best for their families, again, because of the low pay that they would face in state government.
Well, and I think a lot of the time people don't have any idea, and I don't blame John Q. Public for this. They have no idea, why would I care what a state employee makes? Why do I care if those positions are vacant? In fact, great, let's save the money and not have somebody in those positions. Because in their, a lot of people's minds, it's like some faceless bureaucrat doing nothing in every job. But when you talk to the public and you tell them, look, we don't have enough folks to get newborn testing done on a timely basis that would help newborns and their families keep from a situation where they're going through a much worse health outcome than is necessary. We don't have enough people to do autopsies on a timely basis, which doesn't just devastate those families who don't have answers, but can affect law enforcement's ability to chase fentanyl deaths, you know, and who was responsible for getting that fentanyl to the person who died. We put a face on it and we remind people what government does for them. And all of a sudden, having one quarter of them vacant matters. And I think that's our job as an organization. We have to do, we have to continue to push that message to the public.
We're talking to Artis Watkins, who's the executive director of SENIC, the State Employees Association of North Carolina. Obviously, SENIC is very engaged in what's going on Jones Street at the legislature, but you also will be following the elections. This is an enormously important election year. Seems like even greater urgency with some of the issues we've been discussing here in recent moments. We're going to have a new governor, a new state treasurer, a new labor commissioner, just to name a few. These are going to have big implications in this realm as well, right?
A lot of turnover and a lot of uncertainty. These are jobs that you definitely need to know what you're doing and what you're dealing with. I think sometimes people feel like, hey, anybody can do it. That's definitely not the case. It's very complicated. And if you don't know what you're doing in running agencies, in, you know, in trying to craft budgets with the public's money, it can be a disaster.
And we've seen, of course, in the March primary, really the defeat of a lot of, I don't know, we'll call them establishment candidates, but I wonder if you have any concerns about that. We've got some people who are seeking very high government office in a lot of slots and certainly in legislature as well, who really have no prior meaningful government experience. It seems like if that were the case, it might make it even more difficult to advocate for better wages, better benefits, better working conditions for state workers.
Yeah, I think sometimes it becomes popular to say, you know, I'm not a politician. I've never been in government. Vote me. I can see where on its face that might sound great, a fresh perspective. But at the end of the day, people do expect government to run. You know, the argument over whether or not you run it like a business is a whole other issue, but it does have to run efficiently and effectively, or else, as we kind of talked about a little earlier, there are life and death effects for people in multiple areas of government. So it's got to run.
I want to go back to that. You alluded to the situation in our prisons, which really does sound like an abject crisis. Talk to us again. So the number, did you say 60% in some instances of vacancies?
In some prisons, yes. And remember, the way the vacancies are counted, if somebody's out on workers' comp or something like that, they're still counted as being, you know, a filled position. So in reality, we have an excess of 60% in some of our prisons.
It's fairly terrifying.
That are vacant. Very terrifying. It's not good for anybody.
Yeah, well, you can imagine how hard, it's hard enough to recruit people that want to do this work, and then the pay is not very good, and then, oh, by the way, do three jobs when you get hired. Is anybody doing this better? I mean, I got to believe, at least in some places, maybe it's not quite this dire situation in other states around the country, perhaps.
I think it's fairly popular around the country to think, you know, let's shrink. This whole idea of shrink government has been popular since the 80s, and the whole Grover Norquist theory of let's shrink government in the bathtub. It's a real popular message, again, on its face, until people realize how it affects.
One area that people, just about everybody in modern North Carolina, interacts at one point or another with in state government is the division of motor vehicles. And as part of the budget last year, the General Assembly actually authorized a study regarding privatizing the Department of Division of Motor Vehicles. I guess the report's due here in a few weeks. This is another agency with big vacancy rates. Talk to us about this and this trend that maybe I think has a lot of people legitimately concerned about whether we're really going to sell off such an important public institution as our DMV.
I mean, I think it's dangerous whenever you talk about, you know, whenever there's a problem, you can't hire enough people, keep enough people in those jobs to keep lines moving smoothly, to think, okay, well, the answer is we're going to privatize it is a not surprising reaction, but I think you'd be very hard pressed to find a case where that has worked well. I know we went through this years ago. We faced privatization of prison maintenance and prison healthcare, inmate healthcare, things like that. And those had been disastrous around the country. And even when they were done on a pilot project level here in this state, they were disasters that the state had to take back. So same with DMV. I think there's one state that has privatized DMV in its totality. But when people think of DMV and they get frustrated, often what they're describing is an experience they had at a license plate agency that's actually run by the private sector right now, because a number of those license plate agencies are privately run. And so that's always been humorous to me, that one of the biggest beefs about DMV and those state employees is actually private sector. But that makes sense, because if you can imagine, how are you going to make a good profit or even a decent profit if you're trying to provide enough service? And in this economy, thank goodness, wages are finally getting a little bit competitive, a little bit. There's no way for it to be profitable without the service not being where it needs to be.
It's sort of the same thing we've seen in the school privatization. You know, it never seems to raise to the top the fact that about half of all new businesses fail. We talk about running government like a business, but government can't fail. It has to still
right.
do its job.
Well, and DMV, every DMV in the country routinely communicates with a number of federal government entities like Homeland Security.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, remember 9/11, some of the terrorists involved in 9/11 had gotten their licenses in Florida. And there is a lot of information that is shared that is so important to national security. And that's what terrifies me. The thought, those are the thoughts that we have to stop and pause before we think about just privatizing in the interest of some kind of unknown efficiency.
And of course, you would suspect that someone who's a career public servant has been doing something for 10, 20, 30 years, you get better at something. You practice, you do something for a long time, you get faster at it. You're going to be more devoted to it than someone, maybe comes in on a contract basis for a year and then splits for something else. It just sort of stands to reason that be the case.
Absolutely. I was with some of the folks in our DMV headquarters in Rocky Mount last week, and you know, they're scared to death over the unknowns of what's going to happen with their jobs, with their department. And they do feel angry, and they do feel really unappreciated that it would even in their mind be out there. Whether their jobs are on the line or not, nobody can make them feel better about the unknown right now. And that's not good for people who are already overworked and understaffed. That's just a terrible thing to have hanging over their head.
I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk in our time that remains about healthcare and access to healthcare. One change that's taking place, became effective this week as we record this, is the state health plan is ending its coverage for GLP-1 weight loss drugs, drugs like Wegovy and Ozempic. It's going to affect a lot of people, right?
It will affect, I think it's just shy of 25,000 people, the state health plan said, are on the drug. But remember, it's just shy of 25,000 people out of almost 800,000 people on the plan taking the GLP-1s, but they're now accounting for 10% of the overall pharmaceutical spend of the plan, that one class of drugs. And so it's unsustainable. It's a really, this is not just the North Carolina state health plan. It is insurance plans all around the country that are saying at these costs, which are four and sometimes five times what they are literally anywhere else in the world, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, I understand maybe in Europe, other parts of the world, it's a lot less expensive. Why are we paying so much for these things?
Yeah, because they can do that here. I mean, and when we have sat down and met with the people involved, you know, we talked to CVS Caremark last week on our podcast, and at one point they referred to it as a legal monopoly. It is. So Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, manufacturers of these drugs, they can do what they want here. And it would be different if they were coming out and saying, hey, this is how much it costs for research and development and all of the hoops that we have to jump through. Let us show you. Nobody's trying to show that. And if that were the case, we would be subsidizing the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing repeatedly is, well, it's different in those other countries where it's cheaper. And that's because they have socialized medicine. So my question to them was, well, as Americans are facing this more and more to where it's literally not sustainable, at what point are we going to say, okay, if this stuff we heard growing up was so bad, this socialized medicine, are you not worried that a bunch of us are going to say, well, then give me that socialized medicine if it means I can afford my medication? I just go say, I think we're to a tipping point.
Yeah. When you look at the polls and what people say, sometimes they're surprisingly progressive when it comes to things like universal access to health insurance that may take some of the profit out, a little bit of the massive profits out of it, but expands the service. Yeah. So people want to keep up with what's going on at Scenic. You have your own podcast. Scenic is active in a lot of realms. Well, I assume there's some stuff you're going to be putting out there with the 2024 election, lots of important races coming up. How should people keep up if they're not just listening to News and Views?
Well, definitely come to the Scenic website, www.senc.org. Scenic, obviously, this is State Employees Association in North Carolina. And our podcast, it's available in a number of places where you can hear podcasts. This is not my forte. It's our communication director's forte, but it's called the Scenic, S-E-A-N-C, View. So we're just starting with that. We're really trying to work out the kinks and learn it. But it's another way to communicate to public employees and to folks who might be interested in what's going on with public employees.
Well, Artis Watkins is the executive director of Scenic, the State Employees Association of North Carolina. They're doing incredibly important work, often fighting against some pretty powerful entrenched interests for a very good cause. So we wish you all the best in those efforts. Please keep up the good work. And we'll check in again on this podcast again, probably sometime later this year.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Coming up next, the U.S. economy is strong, but many Americans remain worried. We'll talk to a journalist who's been asking why. Stay with us.